Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Gangsters, what's up, guys?
John Anik, Kenny Florian.
Oh, my God!
You want a podcast? Great. They have some audio on your website that nobody goes to.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Ah, yes, it is finally here. It is the biggest UFC fight week of 2017. And you know what? We appreciate you making us a part of it for you. Good Monday to you, October 30th, 2017. Episode 129 of the Anik and Florian podcast. Ken Flo, how goes the battle out there in SoCal? Can you even call it a battle in SoCal? Like, what are you guys battling out there?
I don't know. It's really cloudy right now. I don't even know what to do with myself. TJ, it's pretty cloudy over here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, but it's teasing me because it's not raining.
Yeah, true. Well,
you
I mean,
you guys got some heat there right now, though.
Decent. And it's like, what, 70?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, okay, perfect. So it's perfect weather, dude. We don't have to deal with hurricanes. I mean, I heard an earthquake is probably coming, but whatever.
I've had three fires within 6 miles of my house.
Yeah, that's not good.
No.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Not a fan.
No matter where you are, there's always something. But we're here in South Florida, and finally, it looks like Las Vegas. It was like 55 degrees at times over the weekend. So the Bostonian in me very much enjoying a little chill down here in Florida. But most of the year, we're sweating 5:30 in the morning, walking the dog. Well, anyway, this is a huge show for us, of course, because one George St. Pierre, Ken Flo's former teammate, is going to grace the Octagon this Saturday night for the first time in 4 years. It's 5 days out. It doesn't even feel real right now, Ken Flo. But today also feels big for us because, as some of you may know by now, the Anik and Florian podcast has agreed to a licensing deal with Fox Sports. And this is very exciting for us as we try to take this show to the next level, Kenny. So this is something we've been working on really for most of this year, and thankfully just before the biggest UFC pay-per-view of 2017, Anik and Florian podcast, Fox Sports, we are one.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. This is something we've been working on for a little while, and for it to finally come to fruition, it is just great, man. We're going to be able to reach more fans, in my opinion. There's no doubt about that, and just be able to interact with this very passionate UFC fan base and take it all to the next level, dude.
All right, a few details, and then I promise we will get to the fight. So you can still access the show in all of the usual spots, iTunes, SoundCloud, all of that. Now, though, you'll also be able to do so through the Fox Sports channels of distribution, which is just huge for us. And I think positions us to get the show potentially in the ears and in the homes and everything else of a lot of people that don't even know the show exists. So that is a good thing. Slowly but surely, we're also going to enhance the show over the next several months to include video and graphics. Ultimately, though, in terms of content and format, that's going to go largely unchanged. You're still getting a fresh episode every Monday. Ray Longo is still going to have his Ray Longo Minute coming up here today. And real quick, Kenny, I just want to thank the listeners without whom none of this would be happening. You've helped us grow. Many of you have been with us from the second or third episode, and you've put us in a position to keep this thing going while our wives ask us why more money isn't coming in on the damn show. So the least we can do is pass along our appreciation. Thanks to Ray Longo, of course, our weekly staple. Our producer, TJ DeSantis, thank you, the man who first encouraged me to even dip my toe into the podcast water. So very exciting. Thanks to the folks at Fox Sports, Peter Murphy, Mike Buckland, Neil Foley, and all the names I'm leaving out, everybody who made this partnership possible, as we hope for big things for the Anakin Florian podcast in 2018 and beyond. Let's get to headlines.
It's time for headlines.
I have some very urgent and important breaking news.
Headlines on the John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
All right, so UFC Sao Paulo recap. Ken Flo, here's the part of your week where you get to do your post-fight show again. I actually watched the whole thing this morning. By the way, I don't know if you can see me. I got the Tough Talk.
Oh, wow.
Green tea mug going
that
today.
Is support right there.
We don't watch that show anymore because Ken Flo's no longer part
That's
of it.
That's right.
But so UFC Sao Paulo, Brunson versus Machida. And I don't always, before we do the show, get a chance to hear what you think about the fights on the post-fight show before we sit down. But I think we're in unison on this, at least in terms of the story being Derek Brunson and not Lyoto Machida returning from an extended layoff here. And I was glad that you highlighted just how elite a middleweight this is. And on the strength of this win, despite what happened against Robert Whittaker a few fights back, Derek Brunson has put himself now in prime position here at 185 pounds.
Now, I knew this was possible, that Derek Brunson was able to beat Machida and beat him by knockout just based on his natural gift of power in that left hand. But, you know, to see it actually play out against a Machida who was looking pretty sharp on the counter, was retreating and able to counter Brunson. There was perhaps a moment where Brunson just looked a little bit frustrated, couldn't really get his hands on Machida. But, you know, this is why he's been facing all that tough competition, was for a performance like this, where you can learn from past so-called failures, where a lot of the fans like to look at it like, oh, you know, that's it, he's done. He lost against Anderson Silva, or, you know, he failed against Romero. Well, those were all experiences for him to improve, learn from, and get better. And that high-level competition led him to this amazing performance here against Machida. And Derek Brunson, that is putting it together now and able to adjust like he did against a true veteran and a former champion, Lyoto Machida, is a very, very dangerous fighter. And I give him a chance against anyone out there. As good as Luke Rockhold is, I don't know if Rockhold wants his fight against Brunson, because if he gets caught against someone like Brunson, it could be over. You know, he can't do the same thing that he did against someone like David Branch. And the fact that Brunson still and always will have his wrestling in his back pocket, he's going to be a threat for a very long time.
Someone suggested on Twitter that a fight between Derek Brunson and Chris Weidman would have legs. I don't disagree. If Ray Longo is believed to be a man of his word, it seems as though the fight they want to make is Chris Weidman versus Jacare Souza. And that would leave potentially Rocco versus Brunson. Of course, Luke is hoping that he can get another crack at Michael Bisping or George St. Pierre. And you'll hear from UFC welterweight champion Tyron Woodley later in the program today. I'd imagine he thinks as well that he factors into that mix in terms of who the GSP Bisping winner would be facing. But for Derek Brunson, Kenny, last six UFC wins, all by first round knockout, a lot of them against high level competition. And other than that suicide mission, as striking coach Colin Oyama called it, against the UFC's interim middleweight champion Robert Whittaker, it has been a really good 2 or 3 years for Derek Brunson. Had that fight in February against Anderson Silva, a decision that easily could have gone his way. Maybe Silva getting the benefit of the doubt there from the judges for his octagon control. I don't know. But the body of work for Derek Brunson is strong to quite strong. And people are always going to knock him against elite competition until he gets that signature win. I think, despite the fact that Machida is coming off a layoff here, I think you can quantify this as a signature win. And let's also not forget what he did a couple years ago as a far less fighter against Yoel Romero. He got some things done. So I would agree with you. I think Derek Brunson is not just willing, but he is able and ready to take his shots at this division's elite.
Yeah, I really believe so. And again, you can argue this fight here against Machida was that signature win. This is a guy who's a former champion. And I really think that Brunson's putting it all together right now.
It is amazing, too, at times how people want to take away from athletes when they rise, right? And in other sports, we talk all the time. In Major League Baseball, you win 1-0, nobody gives a shit, right? But in this sport, style points are very important. And when you beat Lyoto Machida coming off a 2-year layoff, maybe it doesn't ring as true as it would have had Machida been in a regular active competition schedule. But we're not taking anything away from Derek Brunson on these airwaves, you can be sure. Nice to see him win that $50,000 bonus. He's got a lot of children. Ken Flo can't relate yet, but boy, man, when these fathers get these bonuses, I feel good for them. And I feel good for Derek Brunson. He's a good guy. And a lot of people thought, too, that that Whitaker setback in terms of the championship picture was going to be too much for Derek Brunson to overcome. Well, main event showcase here, road favorite in Sao Paulo, and it really couldn't have gone much better for Derek Brunson. So congratulations to DB. Also, congratulations to Colby Covington. Goes into Sao Paulo, incites a city, if not an entire nation. Asked for this fight against Damian Maia, got it, and largely dominated the fight after Maia started pretty strong on the feet, Ken Flo.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, a wrestler striker is always going to be a difficult matchup for a guy who strictly comes from that jiu-jitsu background. And of course, Damian Maia has been extremely successful with jiu-jitsu. But when you're not able to get that takedown, man, and you're forced to strike with someone, it's going to be tough. And I think Damian Maia coming off that fight against Tyron Woodley, where perhaps he was criticized or felt that it wasn't the most exciting of fights, felt like he had to deliver a performance that just was not in his repertoire. I mean, he's not that kind of guy, and his feet just got caught in quicksand. He wasn't moving, and I think a lot of that was because of those damn calf kicks from Colby Covington. They're landing again and again. That's going to slow you down on the lead leg. So Maia really wasn't getting a lot of competent shots off against Covington. He was up on his knees, and Covington was sprawling on him, making him pay with some ground and pound. So it was a tough fight for Maia. Maia was doing quite well in the first round. I actually thought he won that first round. He was landing shots. Yeah. He cut up Covington. But Maia just couldn't keep up that pace. Covington just had too much dog in him. You know what I mean? And he basically made it a sink or swim kind of fight. He said, come into the deep waters with me. Let's tread water. Let's get crazy. Let's see who can withstand it. And Maia just could not. He's not that kind of fighter. Took a lot of damage. And I don't know if it was one of the down blocks, the wrestling of Covington, or if it was a shot that he maybe countered him with. But in the third round, Maia was bleeding all over the place. Did not look good. Unfortunate, because I've been such a long-time Damian Maia fan. Love what he does. He's the epitome of a true martial artist, but just couldn't get it done in his hometown.
I hated this spot for Damian Maia going in, Kenny, though, and we talked about it some on the air, but I think more off the air. The Masvidal fight in May and the accompanying weight cut down to 171 pounds. The title fight on relatively short notice, 4 or 5 weeks against Tyron Woodley. That was July 29th. And then turning around here against another high-level top 10 guy in Colby Covington. Maybe that wasn't much of a factor, and maybe the weight is easier for Maia to manage because he's making it three times in a span of 8 or 9 months. But I just didn't like the spot for him. And again, I do think largely you have two fighters going in different directions. You have one fighter who is not yet having reached his UFC prime or his MMA prime, and another fighter in Damian Maia that maybe is a couple years removed from his prime. So I didn't love the spot for Maia. As far as Covington goes, Kenny, and his ceiling, I think a lot of us think very highly of this guy. Just the one setback in the UFC, I believe, against Warley Alves. This was not his cleanest performance. Certainly did enough to get the job done. He's got the shades and the stitches to prove it, but not the best, cleanest performance from Colby Covington necessarily.
No, not at all. I mean, listen, the pace at which he kept this fight was very impressive. The toughness that he portrayed in the octagon against one of the best welterweights in the world, Damian Maia, was very impressive. Skill-wise, you know, you shouldn't look that bad striking with someone like Damian Maia. And that's no offense to Maia, but Maia just has never been that high-level striker. I think maybe he threw one kick the whole fight. He didn't throw really any kicks at all. It was basically boxing, and it was brawling, really, more than anything else. So it was a little bit sloppy. I think Covington should have had a cleaner performance, no doubt about it, especially if he's asking for that title shot against Tyron Woodley. But it was a great performance nonetheless. Anytime you walk out of the octagon with a win, you should be thanking your lucky stars, especially against an elite fighter like Amaya. But Covington still has some work to do. There's no doubt about it on the feet. And I think this was one of those fights where he'll look back and say, okay, I did this wrong. This is where I need to adjust and get better.
Do we know if Colby Covington has made his way out of Brazil? I'm not sure they're going to let him back in the country once he leaves.
Dude, I mean, yeah. I mean, if you're like a TSA guy, obviously it's not called TSA, but whatever, the security in Brazil, I'm not letting that guy through. I'm like, that's the guy that insulted. We're a bunch of animals. Well, let me take you into this room over here.
Well, and I'm telling you, Kenny, you know as well as anyone, and I've been down there 24 times.
Yeah.
They know who these UFC fighters, commentators, right? Like, it's not right. like you're in the United States and Ken Flo can walk by the TSA. You know, they don't give a shit, right? In Brazil, everybody knows who all of these guys are.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that was somewhat of a weird navigation at the airport and in the streets for Colby Covington in Sao Paulo. So what he said early on was, you know, he called the place a dump, right?
Yeah.
Right at the outset of fight week, I guess, and then sort of doubled down and called them all filthy animals after the fight. We have seen guys cut down Brazil and talk trash about the nation, Conor McGregor, Chael Sonnen. But this time, Kenny, it really seems to have struck a chord, not just with Brazilians, but a lot of people seem to be upset with Colby Covington. Largely, I agree with him when he says there is a little bit of a double standard. But at least in my recollection, this is the first time someone demonstrably called out, other than, you know, your ally Quinta, you know, telling the Virginia crowd to, you know, fuck off or whatever. But this is the first time I can remember after a win, a guy getting on the mic and taking it another step further.
He doubled down, right? I mean, that was crazy. He barely got out of the arena. I mean, they were throwing stuff at him. So that was not good. But man, like, he's got to be careful because, you know, in Brazil, there's a lot of people that are very hungry over there, and your life really isn't worth much over there. I mean, there's guys at 10, 15, 20 bucks, they'll take your life for you gladly. And if you're insulting them with all that stuff, that is not good, man. Sao Paulo can get dangerous at times. So not a good place to say that. And it's just disrespectful. And I get it. Leading up to the fight, as far as hyping the fight, you can talk about your opponent, whatever, you know. But continuing to insult a country and a crowd, I don't know. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But
I think some of Colby Covington's trash talk and some of his tweets have been absolute gold. I think there have been a lot of misses there as well, Kenny. And it's sort of a weird voice that I'm trying to wrap my head around, right?
Right.
Colby Covington's social media voice, because it doesn't dovetail with the guy on the microphone. I think his articulation skills on a microphone could improve, and I think, you know, that will maybe make it align more with what we're seeing on social media. But he has put himself in the mix, not just as a welterweight contender, but as someone that people one way or another care about, right? I mean, this was a late show Eastern Standard Time, Kenny, and I'm trying to set my alarm to wake up and see this fight because Covington sort of got me in. So this is sort of the world in which we operate, for better or for worse. I think largely it's for worse, but it's hard for me to sit here and blame guys for going on the offensive verbally when it is going to help, I think, more than it's going to hurt in the long run in terms of their career progression.
There's a reason he got this fight. There's a reason he got this fight is because he's talking about it. People are talking about him, the things that he's saying. And it's very easy to get lost in the shuffle in the UFC, especially in this crazy welterweight division. So people are realizing that, you know, the more verbal you are, you know, the more vocal you are, I should say, and the more you ask for fights, the more that you build up these fights, you're going to get them. If you're sitting there quiet, you know, no one's going to care about you. So Colby definitely knows that well.
That's why Ken Flo said, "I finish fights, people." I mean, let's be honest.
It was more like,
so
"I
real
finish
quick,
fights." But yeah, it was like
it was.
That.
But
yeah.
Now your voice all chopped up from being a broadcaster. It would be like, "I finish fights."
I finish fights. Yeah.
So real quick, and we're going to get to Jorge Gamebred Masvidal. Kamaru Usman agreed to fight Emil Mech at UFC 219 December 30th. But on Sunday, Usman tweeted, "Bum-ass Colby Covington says I duck him. The UFC just offered him the fight for December 30th. Let's see who is the duck." So we have seen this a few times in the UFC where a fight is booked and then maybe they insert a bigger name. So it seems as though if you take Kamaru Usman at his word that Colby Covington was offered that fight 2 months from today. So we'll see if Mech is out and Covington is in against Kamaru Usman. I think that fight has a lot of legs. And ultimately, I think it's that type of matchup on the back end of a Maya win that is going to get Colby Covington where he wants to be, because there's still a lot of names at the top of that welterweight division that he's going to have to get past or leapfrog to get that highly sought title fight against Tyron Woodley. All right, now with us on the guest line, he is the reigning, defending, undisputed UFC welterweight champion. He's got his SAG card. He's got his own TMZ show now as well, Ken Flo. The Hollywood Beatdown with Tyron Woodley, even the name and the marquee. The great T. Wood is with us now. Tyron, how's it going, man?
It's going good, man. It's funny you say that. I'm opening up mail. looking at a little sag residual check. And I'm flexing. I'm getting ready to flex my muscle because I know Benjamin gonna want to come after me after you saw the last episode.
Well, the movie credits already. Sultan, Olympus Has Fallen, of course, straight out of Compton. So, dude, the acting chops starting to pile up. How'd this show come together, the Hollywood Beatdown?
You know, it's funny. I was a guest host with TMZ quite a few times. It's my opportunity to just kind of lay back, let my hair down, you know, be myself. You know, not that I'm not myself on Fox, but, you know, just working on Fox, as you know, you got to have a certain filter. You can't say certain things. And, you know, it's politically incorrect to voice your opinion on certain stuff. So Harvey said, man, you got a great future in this. You know, you're one of my favorite analysts, and, I really enjoy watching you on television, which was a big up from the guy that owns TMZ. So he said that, and then he came up with the idea, hey, let's do a show together. And I said, okay, let's start tomorrow then. Let's do it. So we got it done. And just the theme of the show is just to be something different than TMZ and TMZ Sports. Actually bring in an athlete, somebody who, you know, got some ties in professional sports outside the MMA, ties into the entertainment, you know, sometimes a strong political view. And let's just have fun with it. He got a good sense of humor, and, you know, he's really quick when it comes down to going back and forth. So they put it together. So far, man, we've been smashing hundreds of thousands of views on Facebook. And, I'm really excited about the future of it.
Well, it's great, man. It's a good fit, and I think they got the right guy. So in terms of the fighting stuff, you have been the UFC welterweight champion now for 15 months or so. You've successfully defended the belt 3 times. Do you like this life, being the hunted and having to respond to everybody calling you out seemingly every time there's a UFC show, or is this getting kind of tiresome at this point?
It's not getting tiresome. You know, I know better than to get people – a platform. You know, it was a couple of times when me and Connor got into our little spiff. Shoot, around this time last year, to be honest, during the UFC 205 in New York, and what someone probably grabbed him and told him is, hold on, man, you got millions of followers, you're going back and forth with Tyron, all you're doing is giving him tens of thousands of followers, which he did, so thank you, by the way. But my followers started jumping up, 10, 20,000 of followers really quickly. People that wanted to cut my head off, there's from Ireland, also people that was finally seeing somebody that wasn't, you know, going to allow Conor McGregor to kind of go after them. So I know better than to give these people a platform. You know, they should want to fight me. They should want to try to be a champion. If you're in the sport of mixed martial arts and that's not your goal, you need to give it up, because this is too hard of a sport, too much time away from your life, too many sacrifices for you not to try to be the best in the world. I do think it's the way you go about it. Some guys are going about it in a very corny way. Some guys are actually going out there and fighting, winning, and earning their key. Those are the guys I respect, and it's an honor in standing across the octagon from those guys.
T-Wood, how's the shoulder? I know last time we heard that you injured your shoulder. How is the shoulder, and are you training right now?
Ken Flo, what's up, man?
What up, T-Wood?
No, hey, you know what? My shoulder is not what it should be, but this past weekend, it was a couple people bumping their gums about fighting, and I was like, you know what, I can actually beat this person with my shoulder the way that it is. So could I fight and compete? Yes. Would it be very smart, especially with your belt on the line, with, you know, several, you know, figures on the line? Probably not. So I was trying to go the route of maybe doing a stem cell, doing a PRP instead of the surgery, and just kind of rehabbing and see how strong I can get it first so I can make that decision. And as I'm strengthening the shoulder and as I'm, you know, getting to that point, I got to make a decision pretty soon. I'm leaning towards not doing a full-blown reconstruction, but maybe a smaller version of it where they just scope out the parts of the labrum that was torn, that's stuck in between. That's causing it to catch, and it's causing it to click, it's causing it to pop. So I think they're going to just take that portion out, anchor it down, inject stem cells, inject PRP on the way out of the surgery, and hopefully I'm back in 3 or 4 months.
Nice, man. Well, listen, before we get into the big fight this weekend between Bisping and GSP, first of all, how much has the sport changed in the last 4 years? Can GSP keep up with the current state of the sport?
I think GSP, when he was in his prime, I'm not saying that he's not in his prime now. Age-wise, he's still fairly young for the sport.
Yeah.
But when he was in his prime, it was GSP and everybody else. Remember how dope John Fitch was? John Fitch was beating Diego Sanchez. He was beating everybody. But when he matched up against Joe St. Pierre, it was just no way he was going to win that fight. And he had created that separation, not in 1 year, not in 2 years, but just multiple years of training with the best access he had to, you know, Olympic-level wrestlers, Freddie Roach, highest level boxing coaching he can get, and, you know, just all his coaches, John, his jiu-jitsu coach. He put himself in a great position, being selfish, rightfully so, to just focus on himself, being the very, very best. And that showed in Octagon. He can take anybody down. I still think to this day, you know, him, Dominic Cruz, and potentially DJ, I would have to say that GSP has the best timing. Mm-hmm. You know, his ability to take down multiple-time national champion wrestler John Koscheck. He took down multiple-time national champion wrestler Johnny Hendricks. Took down freaking Purdue captain John Fitch. When it comes down to a wrestling match, maybe he won't take those guys down there, but when you incorporate proper jabbing, timing, slipping punches, he had a way of getting in on the legs and finishing strong, and I think that's something that Bisping has to really look out for.
So who wins the fight? Can he compete against very large, you know, Michael Bisping?
I'm not even on a point where I'm trying to, like, not make anybody mad.
Uh-huh.
It's just really hard to say. I think that the size advantage of Bisping and his volume, his pressure, and not only that, his ability to take a punch is going to keep him in the fight. I think George St. Pierre is a more skilled martial artist overall. I think he might not punch with as much volume as Bisping, but I think he's tough. He's shown, you know, he was in a fight with Carlos Condit, nearly got finished with a kick,
mm-hmm.
got his bearings down, finished the fight on strong. So these guys are both shown to be tough. His timing is going to be better. He's going to be able to take Bisping down. Bisping's obviously trying to play on the mental edge. So, oh, you just want to take me down. Kind of use a reverse psychology to try to get him to, you know what I mean, to stand up and bang with him.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to say, you know, is the weight advantage going to play in effect for Bisping, making it more difficult to take down? Is the volume going to play in effect? It's very hard. It's a toss-up to me.
UFC welterweight champion Tyron Woodley with us here on the Anik and Florian podcast. So we're going to make a donation to a charity in your name if you can correctly predict your next opponent. And I pose it that way because I think most people believe in this mix of George St. Pierre, maybe Michael Bisping, Jorge Masvidal with a win over Stephen Thompson, and the RDA Robbie Lawler winner. Are you of the belief that your next opponent comes out of that mix or not necessarily?
I think my next opponent is going to be the winner of Bisping and George St. Pierre. You know, I think that's my next fight. You know, victorious in that fight, I think you see me move up to a different weight class.
All right,
and it's tough for me to say because at one point in time, you look at 1, 2, and 3, I beat them. I had beat 1, 2, 3, 5, and if Kelvin Gastelum and Johnny Hendricks were in the mix, I beat them as well. Tarek Safadin, who just got bumped out, Dungan Kim, who just got bumped out. People have a short-term memory on what my resume is and my finishing ability. You know, out of 17, 18 victories, 11 of those are finishes, 9 of those in the first round. Sometimes when you're fighting the actual number one contenders, which very few champions are doing these days and age, you're fighting the Stephen Thompson, you're fighting the Damian Maia. These fights aren't going to be blowouts. You know, sometimes it's a fourth quarter field goal that wins the fight. Sometimes it's a grind, and you know what I mean? It comes down to the last straw. And if you know you can do that, you can come out fast and blitz somebody in the first round. You can be losing a fight and come behind and win, or you can pull out a close one. It's like bowling. Everything's not a strike. You got to be able to catch those spares in there.
And I do think people tend to lose sight of what you have accomplished on paper. And I guess Rafael Dos Anjos made it a little bit easy on you with the call out for a potential interim belt, calling out a champion that has been as active over the last calendar year as any in the UFC. So, all right, before we let you go, I know your sons wrestle, but
that's a joke,
you
got by something? The way.
Well, no,
I think interim belts are a joke, to my opinion.
Well,
I wouldn't be proud to be one to carry around a fake belt.
And Kenny and I sort of disagree on the interim thing, but for a champion like you who has 4 times in a calendar year fought in title fights, it just obviously doesn't make a ton of sense. Hey, before I let you go, I know your sons wrestle, but it looks like they all play football right now. Is your schedule allowing you to see some of these games? Dude, they're crushing it.
Well, you know what? My sons are completely beasting right now. You know, I got a 14-year-old son that weighs 190. 190,
wow.
Plays running back, about 5'7". He's out there looking like Devontae Freeman, running people over, put up 18 points yesterday and touchdowns. I just went on actually, that's where I'm coming from now. I'm going to visit all these private schools, so he's being highly touted out by all the private schools in St. Louis because he's just such a big, athletic kid. And I got a 9-year-old who's probably the best running back in the country. His team's ranked second or third nationally, And once you hit that corner, nobody can catch him. So it's been a pleasure that I've been able to watch football games. And sometimes things are blessing in disguise. Had I been, you know, competing and training to fight for UFC 217 in New York, I might have missed the entire season just due to, you know, being in Florida, being in Milwaukee. But I've been able to be there. I've only missed one or two games all season. And, man, it's just a pleasure to go through this process with my sons. Nobody did that for me. My dad wasn't around. You know, private schooling, please, we had free lunch. I wasn't even getting a bag of chips on top of, you know, getting a private school education. So I'm just excited to be in this position of my life where I can afford to send my son to the best education possible, and also just, you know, kind of dictate his future and showing him early on, this is what you're going to do when you go to college. These are the decisions you're going to make in life, and just giving them a step ahead.
Are you flying in for UFC 217 this weekend or no?
Yeah. I'm flying in.
I'm working the desk with him.
Appearances and stuff to do, and I'll be calling it. That's what you guys do. I need to quit saying that. I'll be at the desk analyzing it as you guys calling it.
I'll be with you, buddy. I'll see you over there in New York.
All right,
UFC welterweight king Tyron Woodley. You know, this is our first show with Fox Sports T-Wood, by the way, so I want to make sure we brought at least one A-lister today. So thanks for making the time, and we'll see you in a few days.
Congrats on that as well, guys.
Thanks, buddy. Have a good day. We'll see you in a few days in New York.
All right, bye.
I think Fox actually wanted Woodley's podcast, Ken Flo. It's called The Morning Wood Show with These Nuts, but it was not available.
We beat him out.
Maybe.
We edged him out.
Wouldn't have been the best fit. Dean Thomas, though. Funny prick. Good stuff from T. Wood today. All right, support for the Anik and Florian podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/ANIK, rocketmortgage.com/ANIK, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. All right, now with us on the guest line, one of the best welterweights in the world, and a guy who I think gets as much respect from his fellow fighters, I think, as anyone in the game, a 45-fight legend who this Saturday night is set to compete yet again at Madison Square Garden on pay-per-view. He is Jorge Gamebred Masvidal. Thanks for taking the time today, man. How's it going?
Oh, that was a serious-ass introduction, man. I'm doing great, my brother. How you guys doing, man?
I'm doing good. I was on that Fight Store website looking at Jorge Gamebred Masvidal t-shirts today. I think I'm getting the royal blue. Are you still in Miami flying to New York tomorrow, or are you already in town?
No, I'm in Miami flying to New York today. I was in a plane for about 6 hours waiting. Instead of just telling us, hey, the flight's canceled, they kept me on the plane for 6 hours. Then they canceled the flight and stuff. But, yeah, I missed a bunch of interviews, money-making opportunities I had set up for Monday. So thanks to American Airlines for that.
All right, well, maybe we'll put a little something extra in your paycheck. But we'll keep it quick. So, dude, you're 32 years old, 15th year as a pro, dating to 2003. I mean, level with me. How is the body holding up at this point of your career?
Oh, thank God. Amazing, man. I mean, there's days that I don't feel like I'm 32. I feel like I'm 52, you know, but for the most part, my body's been good, man. I never put nothing in my body. This is what you see. You see me at 18 years old when I turned pro. Till now, I put on more muscle. Sometimes I take a fight more seriously. I'm a little bit leaner or things like that. But you've never seen me with Vitor Belfort traps or looking like I'm a bodybuilder. I've never put juice in my body. So my body doesn't have these crazy repercussions for doing shit that I shouldn't have done, you know? I think that's one of the main reasons why my body is held up so well for so long.
So back in May, you fought Damian Maia. Many thought you did enough to win the fight, myself included. And that, of course, a win there would have resulted in your first UFC title shot. But you've always had the reputation of a guy who takes on all comers. Now it's Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Obviously, he's high in the rankings, but why did this matchup and this fight appeal to you?
Well, because, one, he has 10 rounds with the champ. You know, he has that draw with the champ, which a lot of people thought he won. And the second fight was also close, you know, so I just wanted to get as close as I can to fighting for the championship. So the next best thing for me was Thompson, obviously. At the time that I took the fight, he was ranked number one. I don't know if he still is, but at the time that I took it, he was number one. So I said, yeah, that's a no-brainer. We have to go after this guy. You know, that's been my plan since my journey of the UFC, since I signed that dotted line coming over from Strikeforce. I thought I was just going to be fighting top-notch fighter after top-notch fighter. Finally now, several years later, it's happening, but at least it's happening now.
Jorge, it seems like the most difficult thing about getting ready for someone like Wonderboy is getting training partners that can mimic his style, his movement, his rhythm. What did you do to get ready for him?
Oh, we brought in my boy Remy, which is he's a huge background in Taekwondo and karate from Lebanon, and this guy is just a spitting image or better. You know, he's real crafty and real good with the kicks, some explosive kicking. You know, just from not having to wind up the kick or do even a switch, he's just right from where he's at. He could, boom, shoot it off like a shotgun shot. You know, so it was a real treat to have him in. And there's plenty of karate guys in Miami too that I use to get myself ready. But we're more than ready as far as the sparring partners.
Is there any way that you can be denied a title shot if you go out there and knock out someone like Wonderboy?
Man, Kenny, you know, me and you come from different eras, I think, where back in the day, actions spoke louder than words. Now, if somebody's screaming, ripping the shirt off, acting like a fucking fool, It just goes a little bit further. So I would like to say me beating Thompson should be the end of all discussion.
Right.
But nowadays, who knows, man? If somebody does something stupid, puts out a sex tape, or I don't know, buys a Gucci shirt and then takes a picture of them with their Gucci shirt, that might get them the title shot, you know?
Oh, man. So I know you were fighting at 155 at one point. Is that ever a possibility? You're stuck here at welterweight, right? I mean, you're one of the top welterweights in the world. It's just crazy to me that you used to fight a lightweight.
I could go down a lightweight again.
Wow.
If the money was right. Like, if they offered me to go down there and whoop up on Ferguson and then fight Connor, man, I'll do it. I'll destroy my body. You know, at around 174 pounds, my body fat is 5%. You know, I don't really have too much to work with, but I could do it, though. I could cut out those 19 pounds of water again and go out to the battlefield and compete, but it would just have to be for the right money, the right situations. If not, if it's not nothing other than fighting for, like, the interim belt or the belt, I'll just stay at welterweight.
Well, when you did compete at lightweight, I remember seeing you working out. You were holding your breath underwater for what seemed like an eternity. Is that, like, something that helps you cut weight, or is that just a mental exercise?
No, that's just to calm myself down. Was I in the hot tub or the cold water?
You were in the cold water, and I was like, dude, can someone go get him? But you seemed to be okay.
Yeah, that's just because I was overheating, and I was just down there clearing my mind, man. Just getting some breathing time underwater, actually, you know, because that cold water, when you're hot, when you've already cut like 15 pounds, right when I hit 15 pounds of water already, that's my wall. That's like where I'm always like, oh, this is the breaking point. I got these 4 more pounds to go. Can I do it or not, you know, and right around there is when I start to do things like that, you know, just have to put either ice on my head or my mouth because I'm overheating. I'm dying of heat from the inside.
Well, at least you don't have to weigh 156 pounds this Friday. What is your walk around weight now that you're competing at 70?
Same exact weight as it was at 55, about 186 pounds.
Yeah. How about that? Jorge Masvidal with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. I know you were happy to see your boy Colby Covington. I can't even say this keeping a straight face. Just go into the belly of the beast, incite the masses, and get another win there in Brazil over Damian Maia, yeah?
Hell yeah, man. And especially the way he did it. You know, he had the first round was tough. He took a lot of big shots, but he didn't fold under the pressure. He didn't fold that he was in Brazil. And then he did what I told everybody that he would do. He'd be able to out-grapple him hard. You know, he'd be able to gas Maia out if Maia got into wrestling exchanges with it. If Kobe would have, like, tripped and Maia took his back, then it could have been, like, a problem. But it just – what happened there would happen another 5 times. He's such a much better grappler, better athlete, and much more conditioned than Maia. So I just – it was just a bad matchup for Maia.
It's interesting because he can't get Tyron Woodley's name out of his mouth, and obviously it makes sense because T. Wood's the champion. But according to nearly everyone out there, it's his teammate and good friend, you – that is closer to the belt, but I guess you guys just sort of are going to let the the chips fall where they may, and whoever gets that title crack first gets it. Is that sort of the mentality? Do you guys even talk about it?
Oh, yeah, we've talked about it plenty, you know, and we don't want to fight each other. Obviously, we got mouths to feed. We got to put money on the table. So the titles, when you actually finally get to make some money, is when you fight for that title or if you keep that title.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of options. You know, if knocking out Thompson, they might offer me, hey, come down here and give this division some life at 155 because McConnor's right. not defending the belt, or at least that I hear of. Tony probably has nobody to fight against. So if they offer me a nice paycheck to go down there, I'll go wreak havoc down there and come right back up the welterweight when everything's cleared up, you know. There's right. many routes I could take. But my only focus right now is to break Wonder Peace's jaw. That's the only thing I'm focusing on right now.
And we can't wait to see it. I know you've also done some commentary for the UFC in Spanish. How's that going? And when are you coming over to the English side, dude?
Whenever they invite me. I don't think they're ready for me in the English, man. They don't want a wild dude like me in studio, man.
I love it.
All right, final question. Have you ever placed a bet on yourself in these 45 pro fights?
Numerous times, my brother. Numerous times. I've actually gone above and beyond. I've bet it like my whole show money on myself pretty much. You know, I've gotten like an advance from a friend and gone and put yeah. that on myself, you know.
Well, that plus 130 on GameBred this weekend is looking juicy to a lot of bettors out there. So we wish you all the best. Jorge GameBred, Masvidal fight, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. It is this Saturday night, UFC 217. You can only see it on pay-per-view. GameBred, appreciate the time, man. See you later this week in New York, my friend.
Thank you, guys, man. Love being on your show, man. You guys have a great day, man.
Good luck, man.
Thank you, guys.
Right, there he is, Jorge GameBred Masvidal. And Ken Flo, you talk about a true original, right? I called one of his fights for the first time back in 2009. Just a no-nonsense guy, and I said it off the top. You say his name to fellow fighters, and the respect just comes pouring out, you know?
Without a doubt, dude. I mean, this was one of those guys, when I was fighting, I was like, man, like, that's the guy I got to beat one day. That's the guy I better be ready for. And he was always one of those guys as a fighter who – I respected because, first of all, he fought anywhere and he fought everyone in various weight classes. And he was so damn good. And you knew he had that dog in him. You knew he had that fighter mentality. And if you fought him, you're going to have to go through hell, win or lose. So it's great to finally see him reach his potential as a fighter. I still don't think we've seen it quite yet. I think this is a guy who definitely can be a champion. One of the best strikers in the UFC, period. Just a hell of a fighter. And when it comes to wrestling as well, you can't take him down. One of the few guys who go to the mat with Damian Maia, and Maia just couldn't submit him. So, I mean, that says a lot right there. He's amazing.
And most, if not all, of his losses have been against elite top-level competition. Kenny, it's like they're all by split decision. Split decision to Iaquinta. Split decision over five rounds to Benson Henderson, a fight you called in South Korea, I believe. Mm. Split decision loss to Lorenz Larkin. Split decision to Damian Maia, you know. When he does lose, it's almost never decisive. He's impossibly difficult to put away.
Yep.
And this is sort of interesting how this fight came together. These guys were guest fighters in the same city. They were hosting a Q&A together. And this fight just makes a ton of sense. Of course, they both competed recently at the top of this division, both coming off losses. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think for Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, Kenny, if he beats Jorge Masvidal, it's going to be a longer trek back to that third title fight against Tyron Woodley if he's still the champion. Whereas if Masvidal comes out here and is able to finish Wonderboy Thompson inside of 15 minutes here, I think the path opens up. I know GSP and Bisping are in that mix, but Masvidal, despite the fact that he lost his last fight, I think has never been closer.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, that fight against Maia, as you said, really could have gone either way. That could have been a win for Masvidal. The fact that people aren't talking more about this fight is insane to me. This could be a co-headliner on another pay-per-view. If it wasn't UFC 217, certainly a main event on any FS1 card and a co-headliner on another regular, non-insane pay-per-view. Wonderboy Masvidal is a fight I've wanted to see for a very long time, and the fact that we get to see it in New York City, man, what a treat.
All right, we will be going further in depth in the main event challenge. Ken Flo giving you five picks today, everything on that UFC 217 pay-per-view main card, but now it is time to lay out for the star of the show, ladies and gentlemen, Raymond Peter Longo.
Now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo.
John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
All right, Ray Longo, first show here with Fox Sports. I know you're going to deflect it and not take any credit, but without the Ray Longo minute, my man, I'm just not quite sure this deal gets done.
Man, those Fox executives are sharp, boy. They are sharp. They have some business acumen.
So did they call you and tell you to clean up the language or what?
No, I think hopefully we're full throttle ahead.
So, yeah, well, I haven't cleaned it up yet. I certainly will honor that request when it comes in. Ken Flo, you know, keeping it clean today. So UFC 217, Madison Square Garden. My tickets are spoken for. I mean, does this feel like a big deal, even though you don't have anybody on the card? And will you be making your way to the Mecca Saturday night?
I got to tell you, man, I'm not feeling a huge buzz for some reason. Or maybe it's just because, you know, the first time they were at the Garden, it was just a mega buzz. But I think I will be making my way there. You know, it depends on how the training goes with some of these guys I'm getting ready. But I think I'm going to be going. But I think it's a great card, and it's a great night of fights. And, you know, I don't know why it's not sold out yet, but I'm pretty sure by the time that fight, you know, by Saturday night, that fight's going to be sold out.
Ray, Michael Bisping against George St. Pierre. Can GSP get it done in a completely different weight class after a four-year layoff, you think?
I mean, here's the deal. Super athlete. I love both of these guys, too, for different reasons. But, look, if there's a fight for him to win at 185, this would be the fight. Like, I can't even see him fighting a Weidman, a Romero, Rockhold, Jacare. I can't even see that. But this, I think because of the takedowns, maybe. But I'm still got to say that I think Bisping's just too big. Too much volume. He's hard to hold down. I think the size difference, the inactivity. Bisping's been really pretty active. He's fought some really good guys. I mean, I think George has really got his work cut out for him. I gotta pick Bisping in this fight, even though I like both guys, but I just think the lay of 4 years is a long time. I don't know. There's a tough one, but I think he'll make it an interesting fight. But, you know, just getting back in there, getting hit again, and I don't know. He's got his work cut out for him. But if there's a guy to do it against, I think this was a calculated, decision on fighting, Bisping as opposed to some of the other guys that I just can't see him. You know, even the size difference would even be way big. What does he do with a Romero? I mean, the guy's he's huge and he's strong, and, you know, he's not going to take that guy down. The guy hits hard. These guys hit really hard. You know, I don't think Bisping's the biggest puncher, so I think he's got that going for him, but he does throw volume and he's got great cardio. Yeah, it's a tough fight. I think obviously Bisping gets it done, but, I just hope George is good. And, you know, and in light of that, you know, seeing the Damian Myers and, the other night, seeing Machida, some right. really class acts in MMA go down the way they went down, I kind of hope that doesn't happen to George.
So you think the four-year layoff, obviously, is going to hurt him more than help him? I mean, he was a guy who was competing, it seemed, like three, four times a year defending his belt. It seemed like mentally, physically, this guy was exhausted. After the 4 years away from the sport, you feel like that's going to hurt him now?
I feel like that's going to hurt him. I always did like activity over inactivity. I think he's going to obviously. I think that's the why he's doing it. He feels great. Probably got all his injuries healed up, and you know mentally he's in a good spot. It's just a big difference, I think, when you're fighting another guy at another level. You know, in a bigger weight class. I think that's the problem. So,
right. Like,
I think he's probably physically feels really good, but I just think the timing and all the other attributes that come with being active, aren't going to be there. And that's where the problem's going to come in. I think he's going to feel great, but I mean, 4 years is a long time.
It is.
So is Chris Weidman going to be in Stephen Thompson's corner this weekend, Ray?
I'm assuming I thought he had a he might have an analyst gig. So I don't know if he'll probably
He's going to be on the desk with
the
us.
Yeah. Right? Is he what you can
yeah,
do it, now?
Yeah, it's going to be him, Tyron, and myself. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what he told me. So I guess I don't know. I don't know how that's going to play out. Right. But
well, just make sure Chris knows that Kenny's the lead analyst and that second chair. That second chair is Kenny. So
Kenny, you make sure you put your foot down with these guys.
Oh, it shouldn't be a problem. Me and Tyron and Weidman. Yeah, I'll just fend him off with my karate. It should be fine. I'll do great. Yeah.
I'll try to give him a pep talk beforehand to help you out.
That's right.
So, Ray, in terms of that fight, I know you and your team are very close to Stephen Thompson and his father, Ray. Tough one here against Jorge Masvidal, whom our listeners just heard from. Your thoughts on Wonder Boy and what he needs to do to get himself back in the mix here at 70?
I think no question about a really tough fight. You know, I'm always high on Masvidal. I like him. I like his attitude. Technically, he's great. For Wonder Boy's got to use his range and, you know, those feet come out of nowhere at any given point in time. And I think he's got to look to catch him, you know, in between punches and just make sure he holds the range and doesn't get into like a firefight with the guy.
Short of GSP and Bisping, the fight that fans keep talking about, at least with me, is this UFC Bantamweight Championship fight. Cody Garbrandt, first title defense against the former champion TJ Dillashaw. I'm glad I don't have to make a pick on this fight. I can't wait to watch it. Any lean from you as to who gets this thing done? Both guys haven't fought since UFC 207 last December. Garbrandt, Dillashaw, close on paper. Which way are you going?
I'm leaning towards Garbrandt, man. I think he's got a big punch. I think he'll probably negate the wrestling. It looked like the footwork that Dillashaw is very similar to Cruz didn't pose a problem to him. It seems like he figured that out. So I'm leaning towards towards Garbrandt, man. I think he's got the power to get some respect and, again, keep that fight where he wants it to be. But again, another great matchup, man. I mean, anything could happen in that fight, but I'm leaning towards Garbrandt.
No, this fight card's absolutely loaded. You got ranked guys like Corey Anderson and Ovin St. Preux, who just headlined a few weeks ago fighting on UFC Fight Pass this Saturday night. So next big date for you, Ray, I guess, is December 2nd, UFC 218. Is that right?
That's right. I'm very psyched for that. We have, Aljo and Merab Dvashvili on the same card. I'm very excited for Merab. He's a kid from the Republic of Georgia that you're going to love. I think, look for him on that, looking for a fight coming out in a couple of weeks. Or matter of fact, within the week, I think. You're going to love that episode. And I think we're going to have a great night that night. I like the way Aljo's looking already. These guys are training hard and you're very, very excited for the both of those guys out in Fresno.
Kevin James blowing up your cell phone. Any word on when you're going to be back on the sitcom? Let's go.
No, the cell phone's kind of empty. let me check while I'm talking to you now.
Yeah.
Nothing.
All right. Well, we appreciate you taking the call today. And again, we appreciate your myriad contributions over the last 2.5 years. And onward and upward, man. We're trying to take this thing to the next level, and you're going to be with us every step of the way.
I didn't realize this was the first show, but very excited to be a part of this. This is great stuff, and couldn't happen to two nicer guys than you two guys.
And you too.
Thank you, buddy.
And me too. Yeah, I'll go throw myself in there too.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Fuck off. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay? Awesome, man. Take it easy. Goodbye.
See you in New York.
The Ray Longo Minute every week here on the Anik and Florian Podcast. And if you are listening to us for the first time, Kenny, so I approached you about doing this show probably midway through 2014.
Right.
April of 2015, about a year later, finally, you were like, all right, I'll do your stupid podcast. And thankfully, we've been able to sustain it with continuity and be here every week. But I said at the outset that I wanted one weekly guest, and we talked a lot about it, maybe Matt Serra, maybe Ray Longo. There were a couple other names on the list, but I wanted a colorful, ideally comedic personality, some sort of trainer coach type and not a fighter, who would be a weekly staple on the show. And despite the fact that you and I are both Bostonians and I have a definite anti-New York bias, we felt like Longo was the guy, and obviously at times he's really carried the show. So we're happy that Ray is a part of it, obviously. All right, so many of our listeners know one of the show's staple segments for a long time was the pronunciation of the week. So we see if our producer, the inimitable TJ DeSantis, can correctly say a fighter's name. We then play the audio file of a UFC fighter saying his or her name. So when I joined the UFC in 2011, no pronunciation guide. Now, not only do we have every single fighter on the roster say their name to tape, but we've worked on a phonetics guide. Myself and our coordinating producer, Zach Candido, Michael LaPlante has helped as well. So we're trying to do right by all of these great athletes. So the pronunciation of the week, again, is sort of a step towards that goal. That being said, TJ, we're wiping your record clean. I think you were a couple below 500 or close to 500.
Not true. Yeah. 10 above 500.
Negative.
What are you doing? Don't lie, Florian. Come on.
He was a little off.
Terrible.
Is he wearing makeup? TJ looks good today. All right, so we're 0-0, okay? We're going to flatten it out. I need you to pronounce the name of the current UFC strawweight champion who this weekend fights in defense of her title against Thug Rose Namajunas. The champion's name is what?
Joanna Jędrzejczyk. That's what I think.
All right. Now let's hear her say.
All right. Let me press this button here.
Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
That's a win, right?
We're going to give you the win.
Thank you.
But Kenny, you know, it seems as though what has been adopted by fans, look at the smirk on Ken Flo's face, is Jędrzejczyk, even though you clearly hear there that she says Jędrzejczyk. Mm-hmm. Polish is a hard language, right? Polish people told me there's no way in English to properly pronounce Gdansk, where we just were for Cerrone versus Till, mm-hmm. right? So on our broadcast, I just said Poland because I didn't want to, you know, do wrong by that country.
Sure.
But I hear her say Jędrzejczyk, but if it's said quickly, maybe it sounds like Jędrzejczyk. So
right. Correct
me if I'm wrong, Flo. It seems like the adopted pronunciation is Jędrzejczyk, but in actuality, it's Jędrzejczyk.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, I guess we can give it to TJ. If we're being generous, we can give him that pronunciation.
Generous.
But
I speak English. That's how you say it in English. All right.
Yeah, but it's how the fighter says it, right? That's what we're going with. That's what John just explained with the whole pronunciation. Right.
Well, and I think candidly, when you hear the broadcast this weekend, you're probably going to hear both. You know, Jędrzejczyk. It depends sometimes what you want to hear.
How about this? TJ can come. TJ will get it right if you can spell her last name right now. And then what do you just?
No problem. I got it written down right here.
Yeah. Okay.
Like I got it. We're all good.
You know what's interesting about that, and I don't know if this entire show is going to be on camera here today, but you get yourself to a point as an announcer where you're so comfortable saying these names that you no longer need the phonetics. So right. When I first called her fight, Kenny, I would write out Jędrzejczyk, right? Y-E-O-W-N, whatever, you know. Now I can just write Jędrzejczyk because I probably typed her last name over 100 times in my life at this point.
I believe
if not. So, all right, UFC 217, just a few short days away. Of course, Jędrzejczyk, a big part of that. We're going to get Gianni the Greek on the horn here shortly to make some picks. But, Kenny, I just want to, as I often do, give you a couple more names from UFC Sao Paulo, and you can give some shine to anybody that you want to. So, Pedro Munhoz. Nice job, I thought, by Munhoz. This is his building, Kenny. This is his arena. And to get the win over Rob Font, who had some momentum, the one-arm guillotine performance bonus, I believe, for Munhoz as well. So big moment for him. Francisco Trinaldo, all he does is win in Brazil as he gets a unanimous decision not over Jim Miller. Thiago Mejia Santos, Kenny. I mean, this guy's frame is completely different than when we called that Steve Bosse knockout back in 2015. He has added a lot of muscle mass and work to his benefit as he knocks out Jack Hermanson. Lineker, unanimous decision win over Chito Vera. Fight of the night, Eligio Zaleski dos Santos against Max Griffin. Who's getting the love from Flo here on Monday morning, kid?
Well, a lot of guys deserve it. Santos, I thought, was very impressive against Hermanson. Pedro Munhoz, I thought that was a huge win for him in that very difficult weight class. I think it showed that he really is coming into his own as a fighter. Rob Font is not an easy out for anybody. And Chito Vera, it took him a little while. I feel like it took him until the third round to believe that he could have won that fight. But that was a very close fight. A nice win from Lineker, who was dealing with a guy in Chito Vera who just had a huge reach and height advantage on him. But again, showing that he's elite for a reason.
Yeah, TJ said to me if the Chito Vera fight had been five rounds, that Chito probably would have won that fight.
Yeah.
And Chito did text me. he's just so disappointed because he was so prepared, right? I mean, this was their chance. And not to say there won't be another one. He's a young fighter. But you get a guy like Lineker, right? All of a sudden, you're a top five UFC bantamweight. So, so a good show in Sao Paulo. We now spin it forward. UFC 217 this weekend. Let's make some picks.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
Finally, Ken Flo is human. Still wins the damn week. Not a great week, though, picking fights for the Flo or our guest picker, Gabe Killian, for that matter. So Gabe goes 1-for-5. Only hit was on Pedro Munhoz as a plus 145 underdog. Flo went 2-for-5. You hit on Francisco Trinaldo in addition to Pedro Munhoz. Both missed on Damian Maia and Lyoto Machida as slight underdogs. So Ken Flo picks up a point on the week, now leads it 80-69. Heading into the biggest pay-per-view of 2017 and joining us to make picks today. Ladies, gentlemen, good friend of mine who I got to know when I lived in Las Vegas. Outstanding handicapper, pro bettor. And just an all-around good egg, he is Gianni the Greek. My man, good to have you with us today, G. How are you?
Thanks for having me. Never better. Great UFC card coming up this weekend. And, of course, we're in the middle of football season. So even though that usually gets all of the attention out here, when you have a mega fight, and especially a handful of them like we have with the upcoming UFC 217, sportsbooks are bracing for heavy volume out here. These fights are already attracting action. So they expect it to continue, even with football being front and center.
Well, and the final two championship fights are pretty close, at least in terms of the numbers. So you might get two-way action on both of those fights. So we've got five picks today, and we'll work our way from the top of the main card through this championship triple header. So the first fighter who will make the walk on pay-per-view, the undefeated Brazilian Paulo Bohachinha, 2-0 in the UFC, stoppage wins to this point over Gareth McClellan and Olawale Bamboche. Now a step up in competition. Gianni, he draws the former UFC welterweight champion Johnny Hendricks. Bohachinha, the minus 205 favorite here. The 34-year-old Johnny Hendricks in that plus 170 range. Gianni the Greek, who will it be? You going Bohachinha or Hendricks?
Yeah, I expect this line to continue to climb as well. I mean, Bohachinha, granted, doesn't have a lot of history, only two UFC fights. We know he's 10-0 as a pro, but what I do like about him is the two UFC fights that he had, it was against guys that the first one was a switch and the second one was a southpaw. So facing Hendricks, the southpaw, this isn't going to be something he hasn't seen before. So I like that, and I could see why some money's coming on the favorite. More importantly, when you look at Hendricks, this is a guy who's lost four of his last five fights, only three wins in his last nine, has changed weight classes. It's as if you're trying to reinvent yourself, I think, a little too late in his career. For me, I'm surprised Hendricks is still fighting. You know, who am I to tell a professional athlete of that caliber he should hang it up? But I mean, just too many wars, twice with Lawler, once with GSP, and just not winning fights even when it goes his way. I mean, he took Magny down six times, passed his guard three times, and still lost that fight because he was outstruck 50-18. I think that's going to be what happens here. I like the favorite, and personally, I don't think this line's high enough. I think if this kid had four or five fights in the UFC, this would be one of the heavier chalk. I think you're just getting value because of Hendricks' name. I don't know how long that's going to last, but right now we're getting that. Even at minus 180, minus 200, I think the value's on the favorite.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that analysis, especially when it comes to the betting line, Ken Flo. So this will be the fifth fight for Hendricks in the last 15 months. Staying busy. Big Rig's got a lot of mouths to feed. I think like four kids. Ken Flo, you don't want four kids. I don't know how many you're planning on having, but you don't need four. I can assure you of that.
That's a lot.
So Bohachinha and Johnny Hendricks, how do you see it playing out?
Well, listen, yeah, Johnny Hendricks is trying to reinvent himself, but I agree with Gianni. He is doing it a little bit too late here. I like the fact that he's switching things up and training with the Jackson camp in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I just don't think it's going to do enough. I think the value there in training with Jackson and Wink is the fact that they can give you a solid strategy. I don't think that's going to be enough here against Bohachinha. Let's be honest. Hendricks is not a middleweight. You know, I think he's kind of just a lazy welterweight, unfortunately. And Bohachinha is going to get the win.
All right, next on the main card, the recent two-time world title challenger, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, minus 160 against the plus 130 underdog, Jorge Gamebred Masvidal. Probably one of the tougher fights, I would think, to predict on this card. Gianni, we had Masvidal on earlier. He says he bets on himself frequently and will probably do so again here. Question is, which way are you going, man?
Yeah, I got to love a guy that has the confidence to back up himself, let alone his opinion with his own cash. So my kind of guy. Stephen Thompson, this kid was born to do nothing but this. I mean, father owned the karate school. He's been training martial arts his entire life, 57-0 as a kickboxer. We all know that. So, you know, his foundation doesn't get better than that as a striker, strictly a striker. And then luck of the draw, his brother-in-law, Carlos Machado, the kid gets a purple belt in jiu-jitsu as well. So, I mean, he's a stud. But Masvidal, I think, is the guy that's being overlooked a little bit. Even though the betting line isn't that high in Thompson a favor, it has gone in his direction. Opened around 150, now as high as 175 here in Vegas at the Westgate. And I think Thompson's going to continue getting the money because Masvidal's overlooked. But I think his form right now is as good as it's going to get. I thought that Maia fight was winnable for him. And prior to that, I mean, he had knocked out Cerrone, knocked out Ellenberger. So I don't think he's out of his element against a striker. More importantly, he lands more volume, and I think he's better defensively as a striker as well. Will he get to the inside? Will he be able to take Thompson down and you know, maybe get a takedown to help with the scoring? Possibly. Line value is what I look for. Again, you know, the process is what professional bettors focus on. Keep doing the process right. Eventually it takes care of itself. Profit will get there. Don't worry about winning that particular bet. And the process tells me the value's on Masvidal as a dog. I thought this line should be a lot shorter. I think it's a coin toss. And anytime you're going to give me plus money when I think a fight's a coin toss, I got to go with the underdog. I'm going to take Masvidal on this one with plus money, but I'm going to wait. I think this line may continue to climb, and we'll get an even better price on the dog.
Sage advice there from one of the best UFC cappers in the world. Masvidal plus 130 for Gianni, the Greek. Ken Flo, you know our scoring system here. You do get extra points for backing underdogs. You just heard from Gamebred about a half an hour ago. Which way you going here, kid? Thompson, Masvidal, need a prediction.
You know what? I'm a huge fan of Wonderboy. I think he has changed the game in regards to striking in a lot of ways in the UFC. I just don't like him coming off of this fight against Tyron Woodley and going against Masvidal, a guy whose wrestling and grappling skills are vastly underrated. I think that Masvidal will attack both the wrestling game and the striking game of Wonderboy and will find one of them until he finds that opening. I'm going to go with Masvidal here by decision over Wonderboy.
All right, the first of three championship fights this weekend. This one at 115 pounds. It'll be Joanna Jędrzejczyk looking to tie Ronda Rousey's record for women's title defenses with her sixth straight. You may recall Rousey's UFC debut against Liz Carmouche was a title defense because she came in as the incumbent. So here, Joanna will try to tie that record. She is minus 400, Gianni, heavily favored to beat the underdog challenger Thug Rose Namajunas in that plus 325 range. Do you think Joanna's reign ends here, or does she keep it going and dispose of Namajunas?
You know, I hate to say it because I don't think you're going to get less than minus 500 when the weekend gets here. And if she's below 600 by fight time, I'd be surprised because I think she's going to be locked into every parlay that is bet that night as pretty much the automatic. And I think it's warranted. I mean, granted, the turn of profit, if you're laying minus 500, you got to be right 85% of the time. So could this girl beat the other one 85 out of 100 times if they met? Probably. I think they could. I think the only way Joanna loses this fight is if she makes a mistake. You know, kind of like we saw Misha did with Holm and we saw Waterson did with Rose in her last fight. You know, if this girl gets your back, you could be in trouble. I just don't think that's going to happen here. I mean, listen, Claudia took her down 7 times the first time they met, 4 times the second time. You know, wasn't able to submit her. I don't think that's going to happen here. I think Joanna wins this handedly. I'm in no rush to lay minus 500, but there's nothing to really make me say this is a live dog here. Again, if I got to hope a mistake gets made, I just can't back that. And for me, it's the favorite or nothing at all.
Kenny, I think Joanna Jędrzejczyk, the more known quantity here. Nama Yunus coming off a big win against the karate hottie Michelle Waterson. That was back in April by rear naked choke. She fought for the inaugural belt in this division, as I'm sure you recall, against Carla Esparza. That was her UFC debut, December of 2014. This is an evolved fighter now. This is a completely different animal in Rose Nama Yunus. The question is, Kenny, at 25 years old, can she put it all together this weekend and be the first to beat Jędrzejczyk in mixed martial arts?
You know, I think Nama Yunus is a different fighter. The problem is the time to beat Joanna was probably a few years ago when she was still developing as a grappler in regards to her wrestling, her jiu-jitsu game. And I think the only way you're really going to get Joanna down is if you are more of a powerful wrestler. Rose Nama Yunus just isn't that kind of fighter. She's not. She's probably going to be smaller than Joanna out there. And for that, I just don't think she has enough of the striking skills to really penetrate the armor of someone like Joanna, who's just such a slick and devastating striker. I think Joanna gets it done here and probably gets the finish.
All right, co-main event. Okay. Yeah. Look at this guy.
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
Ready.
I wasn't sure.
Ready, Fox Sports. All right, co-main event, UFC Bantamweight Championship of the World. And if I know Kenny as well as I think I do, I would imagine this is not a particularly easy exercise here, Kenny, to have to pick between Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you see a clear winner here. Garbrandt, title defense number one here, Gianni, against his former friend and teammate, the former champion TJ Dillashaw. Right now, Cody holding about minus 160 or so. Comeback on Dillashaw, plus 130. Gianni, here we will need the round and the method of victory. Who leaves Madison Square Garden as the Bantamweight champion of the world?
Yeah, another tough fight. This is a great card. I mean, anytime it's tough for the bettors, you know it's going to be fun for the fans, you know,
right,
to watch it. And this is one of those fights that's going to be fun for everyone. Here's the thing. With Cody, you know what you get. You know, he's 11-0, and 82% of his wins have come by knockout. You know, with TJ, it's a little split. He's 15-3, but, he, you know, 40% by knockout, 33% by decision, 20% by submission. Seems a little more well-rounded. When you look at their stats, their analytics, they're almost identical. I mean, very similar. The only difference, striking difference, is maybe a little more volume on TJ's side. You know, he lands more strikes, you know, throws more. But otherwise, their analytics are very close. I think what's more interesting is the history with these two. I think that's what's driving the betting line. All the Team Alpha Male stuff, all the gym wars, who has the psychological edge, how similar these guys are. I think that's what's driving it. And that is the part that's so hard to quantify. And what I mean by that is when we're talking football, if a running back goes down very quickly, I could quantify what he's worth at a betting line, what an offensive lineman's worth at a betting line, Tom Brady's worth at a betting line. But it's very hard to figure out what emotion's worth at the betting line. And that's what makes this fight so difficult, because most of the line is based on that perception. For me, I look at these factors. Cody's coming off a back injury. And more importantly, I look at the level of opposition. And as hot of a fighter as Cody is, as dominant as he is, if you look at his resume, he kind of got a chance to jump a couple of those top five guys and get a title shot against Dominic Cruz because of their history, where TJ really had to fight his way to that spot. And I think he's the more battle-tested of the two. And the fact that he took the fight so quickly, when all the talk is how Cody had his way with him, you know, in the gym, to me tells me, you know, Dillashaw's confident here. I'm going to take him as an underdog. This is a line I think is going to keep climbing as well. If I could get plus 150, which I think is going to be there, it's already there. I don't think it's going anywhere. I got to take Dillashaw. It's going to be the shorter guy, but it's going to have the longer reach. Give me Dillashaw. I think he goes to a decision. I'm going to take Dillashaw by decision, goes the whole five rounds, gives us great 25 minutes of action.
Yeah, I would think bettors, Kenny, would start to salivate if TJ Dillashaw got as high as plus 150. No doubt, as Gianni articulated, he is the more UFC-tested fighter. Am I right in saying that this is a hard one for you to predict, Flo, or no?
It's extremely hard for me to pick. I really like both of these guys. I'm friendly with both of them. I think extremely highly of both of their skills and their skill sets and what they've accomplished in the UFC. You know, for me, though, you know, Dillashaw, I thought, had one of the most brilliant game plans I've ever seen executed in a fight when he fought Barao in the first fight. But who surpassed him was Cody Garbrandt against Dominic Cruz. What was so brilliant about it was the fact that he allowed Dominic, he said, you know what, I'm not going to chase you. That's what makes you so brilliant as a fighter. I'm going to let you chase me. I'm going to wait for you. And I just thought, I don't know if that was just an execution of a game plan from his coaches or whether that was Garbrandt feeling that out during the fight. Regardless, it was brilliant. And I think Garbrandt is a very intelligent fighter. I don't think he gets enough credit for that. Yep. What else? You know, the other thing that he has is that crazy power. If he touches you, you're going to go down. In order for Dillashaw to be effective, okay, what makes Dillashaw effective is his ability to get into the pocket and land strike after strike, and he puts them together. He doesn't have the power of a Garbrandt. I think he realizes that, but he gets you with volume. But he's got to be in the pocket. And I think Garbrandt knows that, and he loves that fact. And if he's trading with someone like Garbrandt, I don't know how Dillashaw can get out of there without not getting knocked down in this fight. And I think that one way that Dillashaw can have an advantage is by trying to wrestle Garbrandt, trying to put Garbrandt on his back. That's where I think Garbrandt is probably weakest. I just don't think he can take him down either. I mean, I think Garbrandt's been perfect in regard to his wrestling in the UFC when it comes to defense. I think Garbrandt is just way too confident right now. I got to go with Garbrandt, man.
Gianni, did you want to get back in there, my man, or no?
No, I was listening so intently because I love a fighter's perspective and, more importantly, a fighter that knows these guys as well as Kenny does. And, you know, that's why I was simply listening to everything he had to say. The only thing I don't know about Garbrandt is how he reacts to adversity. That we haven't seen yet, really, you know, and again, you can't know that until it happens, just like you can only beat who they put in front of you. You know, it's not your fault. And I give him all the credit for that. But I think that's the only question mark I have on him. What happens if things aren't going your way? And will that happen in this fight with Dillashaw, you know, puts him in those in that deep water, in that position, how he responds? But everything Kenny said makes 100% sense. And, you know, again, I'm not diving headfirst into Dillashaw after that one.
Yeah, you're right.
I would rather have him agree.
It'll give you some pause. Kenny, so Cody Garbrandt for you, do you have a round or a method of victory for me, kid? You think he knocks him out?
You know what? I'm going to go with third round TKO.
All right, well, that fight, one way or another, will set the stage for this UFC middleweight championship fight. Michael Bisping, title defense number 2, welcoming back another future Hall of Famer, the consensus greatest welterweight champion of all time, George St. Pierre. His last UFC fight, 5-round split decision win over Johnny Hendricks. That was November of 2013. Bisping has fought 8 times since St. Pierre's first retirement. So here is GSP making this triumphant return. He will do so, at least right now, Gianni, as a slight betting favorite, minus 120. Bisping around even money, depending on where you're looking. Have we seen early action, Gianni, one way or the other? Ultimately, where do you think this thing closes and who gets their hand raised?
Yeah, what I love with this is that you're seeing a different price at different books, which is a rarity in today's world where they just copy lines off each other, which pretty much tells me that they're already seeing action at certain properties. And from the early action, it's coming in on Bisping. And that's not surprising. All the talk is he's the bigger guy. He's the fresher guy. He's the guy with the momentum, like you touched on. You know, he's coming in, off 5 straight wins. So he's got a lot going for him. And that's why I'm not surprised the market started going in that direction. You know, again, St. Pierre coming off the layoff and so many questions. And even though we have a lot of analytics to look at, it was 4 years ago. So, I mean, how much stock can you put in those numbers? So I got to be cautious at looking at that. With Bisping, here's the reason I'm not, you know, so in love with that side. And I hear all the arguments on it, but Bisping is at his best when he's the underdog, man. I mean, when you're not expecting it, he's just that kind of fighter. It's just been that kind of career. He's a grinder. You know, he's not a front runner. He just hasn't been that kind of guy. And now all of a sudden he is. And I'm just not used to seeing him in that position. I don't know how he's going to handle it, you know, when he goes in. Which, St. Pierre, you know what you're going to get. You know, I don't think that the years off is really going to change his approach. I mean, you know how dominant he was. I don't think he's going to be undermanned here as far as size goes. I think, if anything, St. Pierre's probably going to be the stronger of the two, at least hearing fighters that, you know, fought both guys or have sparred or wrestled, whatever, with each of the guys. They say he's as strong as St. Pierre's, as strong as Bisping, if not stronger. So I don't think the size is going to be that huge as a lot are saying. Bottom line, I like St. Pierre in this one. I just think he has too many ways he could win this fight, where with Bisping, we know what it is he going to be able to overpower him and, you know, just knock him out. I just don't see that happening. I think he's too open as a striker. He's not as accurate as it appears. Only lands, what, 38%? So I don't think he's going to outstrike George like it's being, you know, the perceptions out there. I've never seen George St. Pierre really get outclassed in striking. I don't think that's going to happen here. And with his wrestling advantage, I think that's going to really help him here. And look, Bisping, great. He's a great cage walker. I think St. Pierre will put him down in the middle of the cage. I don't think he's going to have that easy of a problem. I think this one goes the whole five rounds, too. If you look, the total of the rounds, 4.5. The money's coming in on the over. It's now 145 on the over. I think it's going to go to a decision. I think St. Pierre gets a decision, and I think it's a unanimous one. I think after the second round, he starts grinding it out and makes it easy. I like St. Pierre to win this one. I like the over as well. I think it goes to a decision.
All right, Kemflo, a lot to digest there. Your thoughts on what Gianni had to say, at least in terms of the size. You know, Ray Longo always backs the bigger man over the smaller man, as you heard previously. I remember him talking about the Weidman-Gastelum fight and saying, how's a guy this small going to beat Chris Weidman? And those words proved to be pretty accurate. But, Kenny, your thoughts on what Gianni had to say this fight and ultimately who is going to win it?
You know, what Gianni said really makes a lot of sense. And you know, Bisping, I don't think that's an easy fight for George at all. But George isn't that kind of guy who takes big-time risks. I think he does see something in Bisping's game that makes a lot of sense for him at 185 pounds. And I don't think George would just come out and fight just anyone at 185. Yes, right, it's for the belt, but I think he does like this style matchup. And I think he likes this style matchup because Bisping does have a very bouncy kind of in-and-out striking game. And there's no one in the game who reads footwork better than a George St. Pierre. His distance control, his ability to read when you're going to come in is what allows him to have such an impeccable reactive takedown. He keeps you on the outside with that long reach. George has a very long reach, a very good jab. He utilizes it to the fullest, gets you to come in. And the way that Michael comes in, I think will allow him to hit those takedowns. The question is, can he do it for 25 minutes? I think George can certainly do it for 15 minutes. The fight gets riskier as it goes on. One thing we know about Michael Bisping, he's going to have to be asleep, or you're going to have to do something to threaten a limb before he's going to keep coming at you, basically. Okay, you have to put this guy out. Michael Bisping will keep pursuing that knockout every single second of every round. I just don't know if he's going to be able to get it. I think he can. I think it's a dangerous fight for George St. Pierre. I hate that I have to pick this fight because I really like both these guys. George St. Pierre, a former training partner. I work with Michael Bisping on a regular basis. Have so much respect for both of these men. But I'm going to have to go with a decision win here for George St. Pierre.
Right,
it's going to be a war. It's not going to be easy. I think there's going to be some rounds won for Michael Bisping. I think GSP wins it 3-2.
And we'll see if your prediction remains the same as you see these guys and make your predictions.
Yes.
On the UFC weigh-in show and pre-fight show coming up at UFC 217. All right, on Twitter, @Greek_gambler, Gianni the Greek. I know you're doing quite well in the super contest. That continues. If our listeners want to find you, is social media the best way to do it?
Yeah, just hit me up on Twitter @Greek_gambler. And again, thanks for having me on. And great fight card, and hopefully a good betting card for us when it's all said and done.
Thank you, my man. Tremendous insight. We look forward to seeing how it all plays out this weekend. Have a good week, all right?
Thanks for having me, guys. Enjoy the fight.
All right, Gianni the Greek with us for the main event challenge. Killer lineup, UFC 217. Obviously, we went through the main card there. We mentioned earlier Corey Anderson, Kenny OSP, these guys on Fight Pass. The fight I got my eyes on, though, in terms of the prelims on FS1, the featured prelim, James Vick, Joe Duffy. James Vick is loading up on himself. I haven't seen the betting line there. I'd imagine it'd be pretty close. I think Vick will be the favorite, maybe in that minus 150 range. James Vick is loading up, folks. This is one of the more avid gamblers on this UFC roster. So may want to tail James Vick and bet on him, you can be sure that he's going to load up on himself. So it all goes down this Saturday. Prelims on FS1, 8 p.m. Eastern, and the pay-per-view, 10 p.m. Eastern. Now, Ken Flo, you'll be in New York City. Got UFC tonight and then working the desk.
Yes, sir.
Wall to wall, I guess, right?
Yeah, man. Taking off to New York City tomorrow, dude. So I got some packing to do. Yeah. We'll be doing UFC tonight out there. Then weigh-in show and pre- and post-show. So a busy week. Can't wait. So excited to be out in New York City. It's been a little while, man. So let's try to find some time to hook up, too.
Yes, sir. If I had known you were going so early, I might have tried to get out there a day early. I'll be there Thursday morning, and nice. We'll be calling the pay-per-view with Joe Rogan and Daniel Cormier, and really just honored to have the chance to do it. So a huge weekend for the MMA leader coming up this Saturday night. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. Thank you to our guests, Tyron Woodley, Jorge Masvidal, Ray Longo, Gianni the Greek. Our producer is TJ DeSantis. Thanks also to everyone at Fox Sports, sincerely, for making this happen. And thanks to all of you for listening once again. If you have comments, questions on the show, you can find us on social media at AnnickFlorianPod, at John_Annick, at Kenny Florian, and we'll try to get back to you at some point during this crazy week, probably when we are in transit. All right, with that, for Ken Flo, I'm John Annick. Have a great rest of the week, folks. Enjoy the fights. We will talk to you once again next Monday. Until then, yo later.
The John Annick and Kenny Florian podcast is a TJ DeSantis production. Its content is intended for private use only.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.
I'm Royal Oaks. Next time on Too Many Lawyers, we take on a couple of villains to sort out whether bad stuff is also illegal stuff. George Santos won a seat in Congress by lying to voters, but is that a crime? And Kanye West made it clear he hates Jews. In England, he'd go to jail for that. Here in America, did he commit a hate crime? Listen to Too Many Lawyers on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family, and 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.